A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I'm Tim, and as always, I am joined by, to my left, young Brittany. How are you today, young Brittany?
I'm good, Tim. How are you?
Wonderful. And as always, we have with us Brandy, although I can't call you blue-haired beauty anymore. I guess you're brown-haired Brandy. How are you today, Brandy?
I'm living the dream, Timmy.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Did you have a nice Mother's Day?
I did have a nice Mother's Day. Thank you for asking.
Has no poop yet. We got a lot of email concerned about.
I don't know that you got any emails about nose poop. He has. Okay. So we're in good shape.
Okay, that's good.
Also, how was your birthday? You turned 50 this year.
Yeah, it's just your birthday.
I did not turn 50 this year, asswipe. My birthday was lovely. It was the same day as Mother's Day. It was lovely.
She got a twofer.
I didn't.
You got a twofer?
I got screwed.
So you got a good gift.
She got one present.
I got a car.
Well, I thought you got screwed.
You got a car for your birthday?
Yes.
Oh, damn. You shouldn't be complaining.
I am not.
You can't please the woman. That's what I said. How you gonna please a woman like that? She get a car for her birthday. That's probably a $35,000 car. And what are you saying? I got screwed.
Well, no, first of all, because... And Tim knows, because Tim's birthday is the day before mine. It's all right around Mother's Day. And you just, I, particularly because I am a mother, get screwed on Mother's Day, because then all my cards and all everything, well, this is just your Mother's Day gift, too. No, that's jacked up.
Okay, I get screwed because my birthday falls on...
you shouldn't have to give
gifts. Kentucky Derby Day.
Derby Day. You shouldn't have to give gifts
on
your birthday.
That's right, Timmy had a birthday this weekend, too.
Yeah, I did.
What are you, 75?
You turned... What, 75?
I turned 75. No, I did not turn 75.
You know, you have reached that point, though, in life that you can now, like me, you know, people say...
You're starting to look like a woman?
That girl's half your age. You reached a point in life where you are dating women that you're three times the age.
Yeah.
Go team.
I tip my hat to you, Timmy.
Thank you, Charles.
And it's for you. It's for you.
We're still in introductions. 10 minutes into the podcast, and we're still doing introductions. So I wanted to introduce
you. You're getting a little bossy. The more and more we do this,
I'm older now. I'm older. I have less time left. I have to kind of move things along. Also joining us, who's already jumped into the conversation, is the very distinguished Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Walters III. Affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today,
Jimmy?
Charles?
I got the man cold.
Oh, Jesus
Christ. You got the man cold.
I got the man cold. And you know what?
Is it all that traveling you're doing?
It is all the traveling I do. And I'm not sure that Ted Cruz washes his hands real well. And I shook him one time. But anyway, that's got nothing to do with it.
He's obsessed with
it. Here's what's bothering me here. I get on the Facebook page, and there's Zuckerberg guy. He's trying to raise money for Nepal, and I sympathize with those people.
Yeah, well, you're known for your charity.
But who's doing anything about the damn man cold?
I don't know.
I mean, it's a serious affliction.
Well, nobody cares about it, so...
That's the whole point.
They can put a man on the moon.
But they can't cure the man cold.
Yeah, but they haven't done put a man on the moon for
a
long time.
No cure. There's no cure for wussbag.
No, you don't understand. When you have, because you have the estrogen that fights off the antibodies or whatever. Well, you might not have anymore because you're over 50, but.
Not over 50.
Anyway, when you have, you don't have estrogen, you got testosterone, and you get those little cold viruses in you. They multiply, 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 multiply. I got cold germs just jumping off of me.
Okay. Perfect. That's a lovely thought. Okay, let's get into the topic, shall we? And today, the topic of our podcast.
No, we got a shout out.
Okay.
Oh.
We got a shout out to young Brittany's lovely and quite insane friend, Natalie.
And Dottie.
And Dottie. Oh, we got Dottie. But we have to, because Natalie is a listener of the show, right?
She is, yes.
And she
is. She is a big fan?
Yes. Very much.
Oh, hi,
so.
Natalie. Thank you for listening.
Yes.
Yeah. And she's crazy.
Crazy?
In the good kind of crazy way.
What made you decide that she's crazy?
I don't think she's crazy. If she listens to her show, she obviously has good taste, and she's friends with young Brittany.
Well, that was the first indication. Brittany and I are friends, and we're Facebook friends, and I see the pictures that she posts, and I think those two girls really need a chaperone when they go out.
So, really, yeah. You are stalking people on Facebook again.
There's no restraining order or anything yet, so just let it go with that.
The topic of today's podcast is the Pulaski axe murders that occurred on June 9th.
The Villisca axe murders?
Villisca. What did I say?
Pulaski? Like,
whatever.
Pickles?
Villisca. The Villisca? Is that how I'm saying it? The Villisca axe murders that occurred on between the evening of June 9th and the morning of June 10th in 1912 in Villisca, Iowa.
Quick interjection here. I know we're just getting started. Now, you're from Chillicothe, right? Or Portsmouth?
Portsmouth, yeah.
Do they speak English down there?
Shut up. Okay.
So I have a tough time, too, pronouncing things.
Villisca, right?
Yeah.
Is it Villisca?
Villisca. It looks like it could be both ways.
No, because that's an I, an A.
We are going to call it Villisca.
Villisca.
Okay, Villisca, Iowa.
We're going to say
Villisca. Let me tell you a little bit about Villisca, Iowa, since you ask.
Please, very little.
You did get Iowa right.
There you go.
Villisca, Iowa is a small town in the southwestern part of Iowa. Today's the population of Villisca is only 1,252. Now, that was as of this morning, so I don't know if anyone's moved, but 1,252. So it's a small town, midwest part of the United States, sort of in the heartland. For those of you who are listening to us out of the country, because we do have a lot of listeners in Canada and Russia and Australia. So this is sort of in the heartland of the United States. Population of 1,200. And up until June 10th of 1912, it was a place where people, felt safe in their community and would be welcoming of strangers and a nice, all-American town. That was until June 10th of 1912. And that is when these murders took place, when six members of the Moore family and two of their house guests were found bludgeoned to death in their home. All eight victims, including six children, had severe head wounds from an axe. After a lengthy investigation, several suspects were identified. One who was actually tried twice and acquitted, but as of today, 103 years later, the mystery is still there. The crime remains unsolved. The Moore family consisted of Josiah, which was the father, Josiah, and the mother, Sarah. Josiah was 43. Sarah was 39. They had four children, ages 5 to 11, the oldest being Herman. Mary Catherine was 10, Arthur Boyd was 7, and Paul was 5. And they, on this evening, they happened to have two guests that were guests of Mary Catherine, Ina May and Lena Stillinger. These were friends, kids who, Ina Mae was 8 and Lena was 12. So on the evening of June 9th, 1912, the family was attending a children's program at the Presbyterian Church. The mom, Sarah, had been coordinating the program, and that ended around 9:30 p.m. The Moores, along with their two house guests, the Stillinger sisters, walked home to the Moores' house, and arriving home at between 9:45 and 10 p.m. Okay. So at 7 o'clock the next day, on June the 10th, a neighbor, Mary Peckham, became concerned after she noticed the Moore families had not come out to do their morning chores. Apparently, back in the day, they were chores to do and chickens to feed and those sort of meals, cows to milk and those sort of things.
I hate that.
So she didn't see any activity next door, and she became concerned. So she went over and knocked on the Moore's door. No one answered. She tried to open the door and discovered that it was locked. So being a good neighbor, she let the Moore's chickens out, which is something you would do. I'm sure, Colonel, that you would do for your neighbors.
You always let the chickens out for people. I mean, that's
okay. Milk the cows.
Well, she didn't milk the cows. She
I would take all the chicken eggs. I'm not a good neighbor.
You are not. Anyway.
Do you steal pumpkins at Halloween?
No. I smash them.
You are terrible neighbor.
What?
And a vandal and a felon.
Right.
And yet she's never been in a holding cell. Hard to believe. So anyway, so Peckham, concerned that no one's responded, she called Ross Moore, who was the brother of, what did we say his name was? Josiah?
Josiah.
Josiah Moore. And she gave him a call, and Ross came over to check things out. Well, he knocked on the door, and no one answered. And so he tried the door again. It was locked. But he had a copy of the house key. And so he opened the door, went in, and he opened the guest bedroom where the two young guests were visitors were staying, Ina and Lena, and he found their bodies on the bed, and they just had been, their heads had been bludgeoned in with an axe. So he leaves the house immediately and tells the neighbor, Miss Peckham, to contact Hank Horton, who was the peace officer of that area, a constable, perhaps, and so Hank comes over to investigate the crime scene at this point and searched the rest of the house, where he found the six members of the Moore families had also been murdered. The dad had been killed. All of them had head wounds, but the dad had just, his head had been pretty much obliterated. He had he couldn't even, his eyes were gone. I mean, it was just a mess.
They took his eyes out too?
They pounded. Apparently he had been struck so many times.
Yeah,
his eyes had been knocked out. But all of them had been struck in the head multiple times with this axe. The murder weapon, the axe, belonged to the family, and it was found in the guest room where the Stillinger sisters were found. The doctors, apparently once word got out, people just started coming over to check out the crime scene, and so the crime scene was really not secure, and there were people all over the place, all over the yard, in and out of the house, but the doctors concluded that the murders took place somewhere between midnight and 5 a.m. The killer, or killers, began in the master bedroom where they killed Mr. and Mrs. Moore while they were sleeping. As I said, Mr. Moore received more blows from the axe than any of the other victims. His face had been cut, and again, his eyes were missing.
I'm glad their last name wasn't Bates, because it would have been terrible to report that Master Bates was killed.
Yeah, well,
really?
Yeah.
That would be terrible.
That would have been terrible.
Well, you said master bedroom.
So then the killer, after he killed Mr. and Mrs. Moore, the killer went into the children's room and bludgeoned Herman, which was the oldest son, And then Catherine, Boyd, and Paul in the head in the same manner as he did the parents. And after he had killed the four children, more children, he then moved downstairs to the guest bedroom and killed the visitors, Ina and Lena. The investigators believe that all the victims, except for Lena, the oldest of the Stellinger's girls, were asleep at the time they were murdered. They think that she was awake, and she had at least tried to fight back because they found her lying crossways on the bed, and she had a defensive wound to her arm. Also, her nightgown was pushed up to her waist, and she was wearing no undergarments, which lead...
Oh, she was commando.
Yeah, which led to law enforcement to speculate the killer may had some... may have at least attempted to sexually molest her, although later they don't think that that was the case.
She just slept without drawers? They did that back in the day?
Apparently.
Now, I guess they didn't have air conditioning.
They had some strange stuff that was found at the crime scene. Besides the weapon, which, as I said, belonged to Mr. Moore, the axe, they found a slab of bacon that apparently was left by the axe, and there's some belief that it was used for some type of sexual gratification from the killer.
Of course.
That's why we keep talking about bacon.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
Well, as long as it wasn't the Canadian bacon. Because you cannot buy the Canadian bacon. The fine people up there, you don't want to mess with the Canadian bacon.
Good Lord.
They also found, which is weird, some food, half-eaten food on the kitchen table.
Why is that weird?
Well, apparently, I mean, I think it's weird that apparently after the guy killed the whole family, he sat down for a snack.
Yeah.
And they found a bowl of bloody water.
Yeah, he washed his hands. Who wouldn't wash their hands before they ate?
Don't know.
So, after they killed people.
Yeah, so it was pretty grisly. All the doors in the house were locked, so they're not sure how the person got in. The investigation over time identified several different suspects, which you guys will get into. But as I said, as today, this mystery, this murder remains unsolved. So, let's talk a little bit about the suspects, shall we?
Well, the two big suspects in this case, and one's kind of weird because he was really just a peculiar man, but he became a suspect. It was Andrew Sawyer, and he was really kind of a transient.
Was he a Gandhi dancer?
No, he was not a Gandhi dancer, and at times he could be a sharp dresser. I do know that, as a matter of fact.
Okay. He was a sharp dresser?
But he would show up, he showed up for a railroad job in a nice brown suit, mm-hmm. Wet up to his thighs, his shoes all muddy, and they gave him a job. Now,
yeah, so this guy was like passing through, right?
He was transient. He was passing through, and he had a couple peculiar things. Now, the one thing that got him in trouble is when he was driving by, he said he was going to show people where the murders were. He was way too interested in the murders is what happened.
Yeah, I think I read something that he was reading up on the murders. He'd read in the local newspaper or something, and he seemed really...
He was just really, really into these murders. Then he got a little itchy. He was afraid for some reason he was going to be taken into it as a suspect. But then, a lot of the transients and unaccounted for people at that time, they were being taken in as suspects. Yeah. So.
And we should point out, in this little town, there was a train depot. So there was people coming in. And
that's where he was working. He kind of wandered upon the site and got a job. So he decides, I'm pulling in the hobos, I'm going to get the hell out of here. So that made him look even, more suspicious. But he's not really, he was really dismissed as a subject. I mean, there was a lot of weird things about this man.
He was very
upset. He liked to sleep with an axe. Right. And who doesn't? Who doesn't? I mean, apparently this family liked to sleep with an axe, too.
Axes were must have been a very popular thing to have around the house, because when we talked about the New Orleans axe murders, everyone seemed to have an axe in their house.
Well, I think it was firewood.
Yeah.
People have firewood. So. And, yeah. But yeah, when he comes in, and here's a funny story about the man. The Burlington Railroad, he walks up there. He's clean-shaven, wearing a nice brown suit. His shoes are covered in mud. His pants are wet and completely wet, and he asked for a job. And they gave him a job. So, but anyway,
I read that, but I didn't think that was so weird. I mean, he was a transient. He probably only had one pair of pants.
Well, I guess back in the day, they all wore suits.
Yeah.
You know, everybody seemed to wear suits. Yeah. And that was the way. Yeah, so.
I mean, he was on the road, so.
But when they finally did take him in, and he seemed to know, he just kind of made stuff up. He liked, I think he liked to, this is my opinion, he liked to impress people. He made stuff up. He was telling people details about the crime, where the murderer stopped in the woods, things like that. Made him look kind of suspicious.
Yeah, I think he just kind of got a little obsessed with this story, knowing, you know, because it happened when he was there. And then he threatened, or was this another suspect? Didn't he threaten someone with an axe that he was going to cut their head off or something?
Yeah, well, there was a guy that Dyer, that got his boss was rubbing Sawyer's head with both hands.
You should never do that.
No, you don't. I mean, it's okay to if you got a girl that's got really nice hair, it's okay to pet him once in a while. But you don't
like young Brittany.
Young Brittany, yeah. She got very silky hair.
Yeah.
But a man, you don't walk up behind him with both hands and rub the head.
No.
That's just asking for ass whooping. Now, he got exceptionally irate, grabbed his axe and said, "I will cut your goddamn heads off." Now, not hands. He said, "I will cut your goddamn heads off."
Yeah.
Now, I'm not really why he was using the plural.
He's
because
hit the peppy.
Well, yeah, because this guy did not, it does not say he was a two-headed man. So, you know, I'm just going with that. But anyway, the end of him was that they proved that he was in Osceola, Iowa.
He had a solid alibi.
He had a very, very good alibi.
Yeah.
Now, the one that I really think did it.
Before you know that, his alibi, it was pretty solid.
Yeah.
He had been picked up for vagrancy.
Yeah, he'd been picked up for vagrancy by the sheriff
the day before,
night,
and they had put him on a train like at 11 p.m. or something, so there was no way he could have got there.
Yeah, so he was a suspect, and I don't even know really, other than to put something, you know, like this is what they were thinking, but I don't know why they list him as a suspect.
Well, I mean, at the time, they were probably looking at him because of his strange behavior, but you know how people
are. Yeah, but they were looking
at
every transient.
But you know how some people latch, every kind of, there's a big story, like a murder or something, there's some people who get, like, overly obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened in his case. He was just a strange bird. It got kind of, you know, interested in his story and started talking about it a lot, and people naturally suspected him because he was a transient, but there would have been no way for him to have been in that town at that evening at that time.
Yeah, so he wasn't really. Now, the real suspect, and this guy, he was the only one actually tried for it, Kelly, the Reverend Kelly.
Yeah, he was a minister, right?
He was a minister, and he was a traveling minister. And he had just gotten into town. He was in town on the night of the murders. He had just gotten into town the Sunday morning before the murders. He attended a Sunday school performance by the Stillinger Girls. And then he departed early Monday. Now, he comes back 2 weeks later, and he's posing as a detective. And he joined a tour to murder house with a group of the investigators. Okay, now that's pretty fishy. But here's the fishiest thing: he leaves Villisca on a train, the number 5 train going west, and he tells fellow travelers that there were eight dead souls back in Villisca, Iowa, butchered in their beds while they slept.
And this was before the bodies had been found.
So this was on June the 10th?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the bodies at this point had not been found. And now he became interested in him because he was writing these just kind of incoherent, rambling letters to just different people, relatives, whatever, about these murders. And
yeah, another example where someone's got really obsessed with this whole crime.
Yeah, but he had been in town. Then he comes back, fakes being a detective, and does a tour of the house. The murder house.
Yeah, that's weird.
Well, that's crazy.
They knew he was a reverend, and you can't, you know.
He also, and you're probably going to get to this, he also had, he had been charged for some deviant type of behavior, I believe. He had been sending inappropriate letters.
He'd been sending obscene material through the mail. He spent some time in a mental hospital.
That's before they had telephones, so you couldn't make dirty phone calls. You had to actually.
Before you had the internet, so obscene material was hard to come by.
Breathe heavy in somebody's ear.
No, you have to send. You have to do it through the mail.
Yeah, and
like he had a secretary.
It loses something.
Somebody applied for a secretarial position with him, and he had sent them some inappropriate material. I couldn't. I don't know if you found out what it was, but I couldn't find it.
It didn't really say. Now his and this is what. Everybody knows that when you're a minister, your kids are going to be crazy. I mean, that's just generally a rule. You're strict with the kids. They go batshit crazy once they get old. Typically. Okay. You ever met a minister whose kids weren't wild?
I don't know too many ministers. You know any ministers?
No.
Every minister I've ever met, their kids are just wild as hell.
Okay. Yep. And they're assholes.
Okay, go ahead.
So anyway, this Reverend Kelly, his father, his grandfather, they were both English ministers.
Mm-hmm.
And now he suffered a mental breakdown when he was an adolescent.
Mm-hmm.
Then he immigrates to America with his wife. He preached at Methodist churches across North Dakota, Minnesota, Kansas, Iowa. And he'd been assigned as a visiting minister to several little churches, you know, north of Villisca. Where he developed a reputation for very, very odd behavior. He would just, it was like he was two people. He'd become this very incoherent, rambling guy. He had very strong opinions on things. Methodist, as you know, the Colonel, I'm a Methodist myself.
Okay.
We're very laid-back people. We're not evangelical people. Mm-hmm. You know, we just mostly like to have casseroles and stuff like that. That's right. All we really care about.
Is that what it is?
Well, I mean, we're against murder. You know, we're against murder.
You always speak out against all the controversial issues of the day.
Yeah, I mean,
against murder.
Yeah, it takes a strong stance against murder.
Well, we'll try to stay on subject, but I'll tell you an interesting thing about the Methodist Church is the Methodist Church is the only major church that has not taken a stand on abortion. They have not taken a stand on abortion. So that's how laid back they are. They're like, well, whatever, you know. Live and let live, basically.
What about Brandy's people?
Brandy's people, Brandy's people, you can have 37 different wives if you want, any age.
What?
Girl 11. I mean, Brandy's people are, her tribe is a peculiar bunch. You know, I could go on that one.
Let's get back to Reverend.
Let's just say
what just happened there.
We should just say Brandy is a member of an unorthodox cult that
what
that we don't want to have a religious
I'm Catholic.
Argument. Same thing.
Oh, Jesus.
You tell me they ain't brainwashing those old people in Big Go.
Okay, let's go back to our suspects.
The Reverend.
Anyway, so.
Man of God.
Anyway.
So he's tried. This dude has actually tried.
So first he gets convicted of sending obscene material through the mail, and he spent some time. He didn't go to jail. He spent some time in a mental hospital.
Did he put his return address? Because that's always a giveaway.
Well, it really that's is. What he did. And it was obscene pictures of himself, probably. Wow. You know, he was the first one to do selfies.
And he probably had to have someone probably had to get under one of those blankets and take
No, he had a string. He had a long string.
Oh, he had a long string. Okay.
Yeah.
He had a big stick.
He had a big stick, yeah.
Selfie stick.
Big selfie stick. And but he was a guy who invented the selfie.
That's not so true.
He spends his time in a mental hospital. He gets out. A grand jury indicts him. Finally, they indict him for the murders. He gets interrogated, and throughout the summer of 1917, he's in jail. They're just interrogating the hell out of the man. They just interrogate him. So finally, he confessed to the murders.
Okay.
So they're going to try him. And then when it comes time for a trial, he recants his confession.
Well, they probably beat him or something.
Oh, they did more than beat him. You know what they did? They put hot bacon on him. They fried up the bacon.
Did they bring home the bacon and fried it up in the pan?
Fried it up in a pan.
Did he ask his last meal to be bacon?
They actually waterboarded the reverend.
Okay. None of this is true. But he did confess, then he recanted.
He recanted.
And then what happened?
The jury was deadlocked, 11-1 for acquittal. Now, that's pretty...
pretty strong.
Pretty strong, yeah. And then they weren't satisfied with that. Hung jury, the well-hung jury.
Well, we don't know who was on the jury to be able to say that.
Well, a couple of the people were in the pictures that he sent.
Okay.
So, it was a well-hung jury.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I've had jury duty before. You had jury duty?
No.
Well, when I did it, I told them, this is a well-hung jury. I can already tell you right now, so you might as well just send me home.
Go ahead.
It's going to be deadlocked.
What in you, please?
But anyway, there was a second trial.
Yes.
This was immediately. They didn't waste any time. You know, it was like, put his ass back on trial again. We can get him. Which is strange because it was 11-1 for an acquittal.
But now, they thought they still had the goods on Reverend Kelly. And And what was the result of the second trial?
He was acquitted.
He was acquitted.
No, but, you know, the thing I can't get past is how in the hell did that man know at 5:19 a.m. that those people were dead?
Well,
unless the people were lying. But but then how did those people know?
Well,
you know, I mean, it's very peculiar. When you dig into this, it doesn't ever really tell you the evidence for.
Apparently, it wasn't very strong. If they got an 11, if the first jury was hung and an 11 voted to acquit, and then the second jury acquitted totally, so. Apparently, I mean, you know, you get into people hearing things, and I mean, it's hearsay, and so sometimes it's not, that's not always the strongest. People's memories are not always.
Well, good. And here's the thing, too, when they talked to him about the murders, he knew a great, great amount of detail. And some of these details were just completely dead on. And some of them were way off.
Well,
and they didn't know if he was just imagining things.
The thing is that people were actually civilians, and not just police, were walking around
in and
out of this house during this investigation. They found that they were indentations in the ceiling where the axe murderer had raised the axe, and you know, so that they were.
Yeah.
So they think the person had to have been relatively tall. But yeah, the crime scene was just a mess. There was everyone in town, the 1,200 people in town, were all walking, you know, coming over to take a look at this big crime scene, and people were walking in and out. So
He was mentally ill. He was writing letters to the police, to investigators, to the family.
It looks like an unhealthy interest in this case for some whatever reason. So he was the strongest suspect, though, that they had, because he was at least tried twice. But we do have a few other suspects.
I would have found him guilty.
Yeah, but you was not on the jury, and you would have been...
Well, I'm kind of anti-minister.
I'm not convinced that he did it.
I'm not either.
You're not convinced?
Mm-mm. I want to hear about the other suspects.
Okay, let's hear about the other
suspects. Let's hear about the other suspects.
I do. I'm interested.
Okay. Yeah. If you'd read the story, you'd probably know.
I did read the story.
Okay. So who's up next?
Dag, he called you out.
Yeah, come on, girl.
Blue-haired devil.
So this is actually... I don't... Then my blue hair is gone. It's just devil now. Thank you.
Okay.
So... my favorite, the guy I think is probably right up there on the suspect list, is a guy named Frank F. Jones. He was a Villisca resident, and he was an Iowa State Senator. And Josiah Moore had worked for him.
Who?
At his...
Who?
Josiah.
Josiah what?
Moore.
The victim?
Josiah Moore?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry. I thought there was a duplicate name in there. Okay.
Wow.
Are you listening?
No.
Okay. So, anyway.
So, they had some personal animosity.
Josiah Moore had worked for him at his implement store for
Moore a while. Moorhead. You said Moorhead.
No, I said Moore had.
Had. Okay. I thought you were saying Josiah Moorhead. That's what got me confused.
Okay,
Josiah
let's go Moore. Back to Frank Jones, state senator. He and Mr. Moore had some business dealings.
They did. Well, they had business dealings. But he had Josiah, period, had worked for Frank Jones at his implement store for a long time. And then he left, actually, to open his own store. And when he left, he took a lot of business away from Jones, including an extremely successful John Deere dealership. And so Moore was also rumored to have had an affair with Jones's daughter-in-law.
I wonder what they made, John Deere made back in 1912.
Tractors.
Yeah.
They must have been the little
plows and whatever.
Small tractors.
Well, they didn't make lawnmowers. They made tractors and plows.
They made big tractors.
Big 1912? John
Tractors and plows.
Right. They had tractors back in 1860s.
All right, go ahead.
But there was never any evidence to support that he'd had an affair with his daughter-in-law.
Probably got those free hats.
No.
That's when it, but you know, there was big straw hats. There was big straw hats with the John
Deere. I'm talking
about
the green.
Yeah, no,
baseball
they
caps.
Was green, okay. But they was straw. They didn't have the baseball caps yet.
So anyway,
baseball hats wasn't invented.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Yeah, there were no trucker hats back then. Okay. So, Frank Jones. The theory was that Frank Jones hired this guy named William Mansfield.
His friends called him Bill.
His friends called him Blackie.
Oh.
Now that's just rude.
Well, he was a white guy, so I mean, it didn't matter.
I bet that was confusing. I guess that's like when you called a big guy tiny.
Yeah, I guess. So, Senator Jones...
Had he been African-American, that would have been inappropriate.
It really would have been.
Wouldn't be good.
That would have been
this conversation's inappropriate.
Yes, it is.
So, Senator Jones... The theory was that Senator Jones hired...
He called Whitey Ford Whitey.
Hired Mansfield to murder the Moore family. It's believed that Mansfield was a serial killer because he had murdered his wife, infant child, father, and mother-in-law with an axe 2 years... prior to the Villisca crimes.
See, you kill your family. You kill one family in your series.
You're branded for life.
Yeah.
Well, no. He then, you know, trekked west. He was the suspect in a double homicide of Jenny Peterson and Jenny Miller in Illinois.
Is he a Gandhi dancer?
He was not a... I don't believe he was a Gandhi dancer. There's no proof either way.
Okay.
Okay. So each crime site was accessible by trains. All the murders were carried out exactly the same way the whole time.
So the theory is that Frank Jones, the Senator Frank Jones, had a beef with Josiah.
Over money. He took his business.
And he hired this William Mansfield character who had a history of violent behavior.
Yeah.
He was take care of Moore and his family.
He killed his family with an axe. I will call that violent behavior, yeah.
So he was released after a special grand jury of Montgomery County refused to indict him on the grounds of he had an alibi. So 9 months before the murders in Villisca, a similar case of axe murder occurred in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Two more axe murder cases followed in Ellsworth, Kansas, and Paola, Kansas. The cases were similar enough to raise the possibility of having been committed by the same person. There were other murders reported as possibly linked to these crimes. There were a ton of unsolved axe murders along the Southern Pacific Railroad from 1911 to 1912.
That was our suspect in the Gandhi Dancer.
And then the unsolved Axeman murders of New Orleans.
Yeah, but that was later on. When was that, 1919?
Yeah, it was 1919.
Yeah, so this is...
But it ain't all that hard to swing an axe. Old man could swing an axe.
But they are similar in the fact that they all were axe murders. They all hit, you know, they all were, they struck the victims in the head, kept intruding into their home, and they used the axe of the family that was there.
So, the murders in Colorado Springs were closely related to the ones in the Moore House. They happened 9 months before the Villisca murders. H.C. Wayne, his wife, child, and Mrs. A.J. Burnham were found dead in Colorado Springs. They were murdered by an axe. The Colorado Springs Police Department found it difficult to believe that the same person could do the same crime just in different cities. I don't know why that would be such a stretch, but okay.
Do we know what his alibi was? It's okay.
I would have to look. Yeah.
It's okay.
So
he was watching TV. And here's the answer, just interesting.
He claims
thing.
To have been in, for the Villisca murders, he claimed to be in Mansfield, Illinois.
In Mansfield?
Crazy.
That's the first thing.
He was in Springfield.
But here's the thing. In the Villisca murders, as in the Colorado Springs murders, bed sheets were used to cover the windows to prevent people from looking in. And the murder actually at the Moore House, the murderer hanged aprons and shirts and skirts to cover the windows. And as in Villisca and Colorado Springs, the murderer wiped the blood off his axe and covered the heads of all the victims with bed clothes.
Yeah, and they were. I forgot to mention that they were all covered. Their heads were all covered. The Moors and the two visitors' kids were covered with their bed clothes.
So there were
similarities.
The colonel got the mail call.
I know you're ridiculous. Yes.
Quick question, though. I wonder if I could interject something here. Now, these people, you're going around the country. Everybody getting killed with axes, and everybody getting killed with their own axes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Their own axes. Now, when we talked about New Orleans, I'd say the first thing I'd do is not have an axe in my house. You know, you'd have to kill me with my own spoon. But anyway, that's because they had the firewood and whatnot and whatever. Now, people don't keep axes in the house anymore, right?
Yeah, right.
But what does everybody have in their house now?
A cell phone.
A microwave. Ain't nobody going around microwave killing people.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
So...
Why is that a good point?
It's not.
No, I mean,
so he was the prime suspect, and not just by the police, but evidently somebody along the line had hired a private detective. They had hired the Burns Detective Agency of Kansas City and
Springfield, the Burns Detective
or just
Agency.
Kansas City, and Detective James Newton Wilkerson, who started really diving into all this stuff. He started getting into all these murders that he felt were linked. And according to his investigation, all the murders were committed in precisely the same manner, indicating, of course, that the same man had committed them. He stated that he could prove Mansfield was present in each of these places on the nights of the murder. In each murder, the victims were hacked to death with an axe and the mirrors in the homes were covered. A burning lamp with the chimney off was left at the foot of the bed, and the basin where the murderer washed was found in the kitchen. In each case, the murderer avoided leaving fingerprints by wearing gloves, which Wilkerson believed was strong evidence that the man was Mansfield, who knew his fingerprints were on file in the federal military prison in Leavenworth.
Was there any, had he been convicted of any?
No.
No.
Well, evidently, and there's no mention of this beforehand, but he, you know, he spent some time dealing with Leavenworth.
Right. He had obviously he had some sort of criminal background.
He had something, but it was with the military.
And he was never found guilty of, I'm assuming, of his family's murders?
No. Wilkerson managed to convince a grand jury to open an investigation in 1916. Mansfield was arrested and brought in to Montgomery County from Kansas City. But payroll records provided an alibi that placed Mansfield in Illinois at the times of the Villisca murders. He was released for lack of evidence and later won a lawsuit against Wilkerson and was awarded $2,225. Wilkerson believed that pressure from Frank Jones resulted not only in Mansfield's release, but also in the subsequent arrest and retrial of Reverend Kelly.
I wonder if there was any connection between Frank Jones and the company that provided the alibi for...
I don't know. But...
Because it's out of state, right? I mean, it was Illinois.
It doesn't matter. You know, a senator is a senator. A senator reaches out to that state senator, and they ask a favor, and blah, blah, blah. Now, Mr. R.H. Thorpe, a restaurant owner from Shenandoah, identified Mansfield as the man he saw the morning after the Villisca murders boarding a train at Clarinda. This man said he had walked from Villisca. If this is substantiated, it would break Mansfield's alibi. It was reported that Miss Vina Tompkins of Marshalltown was on her way to testify that she heard three men in the woods plotting to murder the Moore family a short time before the killings. So,
yeah, I mean, I think of all the ones we've talked about so far, I think William Mansfield is probably, it for me, would be the prime suspect, although I'm not convinced that he did it, but...
Well, he was doing it for money.
Yeah. So, but we do have a couple more, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, there are a few more. Henry Lee Moore was also one of the suspected killers. He was not related to the family. However, he was convicted for another murder of his mother and grandmother several months after the murders in Villisca, and he did use an axe as his weapon of choice.
And what's the thing he got going against him right there?
That he was using the axe?
No.
That he killed...
What's his name?
Henry Lee Moore.
Anytime somebody go by three names, they're a serial killer.
Well, obviously, everybody knows that. And he had an affinity for bacon.
But his name wasn't Harvey.
Well known.
Yeah.
Was he from that? He was from that area?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yes. So before and after the murders in Villisca, there are very similar axe murders that were mentioned before this, such as Blackie Mansfield. Henry Lee Moore was also a suspect in those murders. Henry Lee Moore is a suspect for those slayings, but the case remains open still. So
he's never been charged.
No, he has never been charged with any of them. Do you know anything else about Henry Lee Moore?
No.
Okay, that's about all I got on him.
Sounds like a serial killer.
It doesn't sound like he has any motive or, I mean, well, he did use an axe, but.
Yeah, they just was looking at people who committed. Suspects that had committed similar type of crimes, or at least people who were suspected of committing similar types of crimes. I mean, you know, this is 1912, so there's no criminal database you can go to, or mostly just word of mouth.
So Sam Moore, was Josiah's brother-in-law, and he is also a suspect.
Right, it's Moyer.
Moyer? Okay, that's what I thought. But he was Josiah's brother-in-law, and he often threatened to kill Josiah Moore. This was never really investigated too strongly, but his alibi did clear him of the crimes.
You know, you would think that the how vicious the crime was, that it would be someone that knew them. You know what I mean? I mean, it seems like it was something personal, especially with the father, Josiah, because, I mean, it damn near, I mean, you know, they caved his head in, basically.
I agree.
You kill somebody with axe is pretty personal.
Mm-hmm.
But then, I guess back in, you know, even today, serial killers are using, they use knives, axes. I mean, they, you know.
But I mean the brutality of it. You, generally, when there's a brutal crime,
yeah, it's a personal, yeah, there's personal some knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's it for our suspects, right? So let's go around the room. Colonel, how do you feel? Who do you feel? Do you feel that we've got any of these suspects?
Well,
seem most likely.
This Reverend Kelly is interesting to me, only because he knew things that other people wouldn't have. And you know, the thing, the saying that the people were dead before anybody knew, that kind of, you know, unless he was a psychic or some sort.
Well,
of,
I mean that's, if that's, the testimony.
If that's in true, yeah. It's, if that's in fact true. And, you know, you're a reverend, you have a mental problem, see, there was probably people that didn't like him.
Well, and he also had some sexual deviant behavior, and there's indication that this, you know, like we talked about with the bacon, with the nightshirt.
Yeah, well, let's not be throwing stones here. I mean,
no, but I mean that was the
got my own glass house. I don't want to.
Do you?
But anyway, you would lean toward.
Actually, I'm leaning toward the guy with the three names.
Oh,
Henry Lee Moore.
Why? Because it's a serial killer. Henry Lee Moore. That's a serial killer name.
Not based it off their name.
Yes.
But you could.
You absolutely could.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you something. You ever met an ugly girl named Cassie?
I don't.
See, names are important.
Yeah.
I ain't never met an ugly girl named Cassie.
Yeah, you're right. I'm usually attractive.
Yeah. Names are important. Names tell you a lot about people.
Brandy, who do you feel? Do you feel any of these suspects are more likely than not to be?
I think it was the senator and the guy he hired.
The hitman.
Good old Billy Mansfield. Blackie.
And
I think it was him. Okay. I think it was the combination of the two of them.
Young Brittany. Any strong feelings?
I think that, I don't know, I think that maybe they didn't investigate the people in the household. I mean, I think
well,
it could
all
have
dead.
I know, but you know, it could there could have been a murder suicide, or you know, somebody could have killed their whole family and then killed himself, or
so you
I think maybe that's just something I thought of.
Like Mr. Moore killed everybody in his house and then he hit his head.
Maybe
in the head with an axe.
It wouldn't be unheard of.
I think it would be, actually.
I don't know.
Yeah, you get a bunch of kids around. I told you, when we did the New Orleans accident,
yeah.
You get a bunch of kids yapping, your wife nagging at you. Shut
so
myself
your theory is murder-suicide.
Maybe.
What?
See,
well,
if you
pay
attention.
Exactly. I just think,
really
I mean, pots. I think that Blackie is definitely the number one suspect, but
murder-suicide?
Well, you hear a lot about...
What?
I'm serious. You hear a lot about people killing their entire family. And then killing themselves.
With an axe.
Maybe. It
what?
Was, yes.
Okay, but...
that's commitment.
Just...
It would
I
be.
And they were hit multiple times.
Are we 100%
how often
sure?
Do you hit yourself multiple times in the face with an axe?
People do
I think
that.
You got one
I've
time.
Done it a
people
couple
are
times.
Crazy.
I think you go once.
No, some people
oh, no,
are
I think I think you go one time hitting yourself in the face with an axe. I think you got one shot at that.
No, you got
and
a couple
and you have to
shots.
Go balls out.
Gotta,
no.
I'm
no.
Thinking
don't.
Outside the box.
You're thinking outside this room.
Well, that's okay, too. What is wrong with that?
Nothing,
are we 100% sure that they all were bashed with an axe?
Yes. That's a document.
It's from
I
the,
know, but
from the wedges
really
in
know
the forehead. From the wedges in the forehead.
It's still open. I'm just trying to see
like
what
this.
These investigators did.
Okay, so you're trying to open a new angle here.
Have you seen
saying.
The crime scene photos?
But
yes.
You have?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're
can
gory.
I see them?
All of them. They're on my desk.
Yeah, they're gory.
Can I see? I can look them up online.
Because you're young Brittany, but you may have a point that you're...
No.
No, let me try to... You know, when someone says something really stupid, you try to grab something and make
okay,
it...
This is ahead, a debate!
Yeah.
Oh, it's a debate.
Let's give her benefit of the doubt. Maybe it wasn't a murder-suicide, but maybe it was something... maybe it was a family member who had a key to the house.
Right, because how was the door relocked?
Right.
You know?
Okay, here's a.
I think in those days they used those skeleton
keys. Could I give you a more plausible one than even young Britney's?
Santa came down and did it.
Each house had a little mini tornado that day, and the debris killed the people in that house.
Okay, that's
just
stupid.
That house on the block.
Yes, you're right. That is more stupid than what she said.
No, it's just as plausible.
Okay.
These people are killing them,
okay.
Killing their families and killing themselves with axes.
The mystery remains unsolved to this day. And I agree, Brandy. I think
young Brittany solved it.
Mr. Mansfield probably is the lead suspect. Although I'm not even sure about his connection with Frank Jones. It sounds like he's just a...
He's a hired gun.
Well, it sounds like he was just an axe murderer. I mean, it sounds like he was just a wacko. So
well,
he,
yeah.
He made
so Frank sees it and says, hey, dude, you want
to
make
it
for fun?
He was just your garden variety axe murderer?
You
want
to make some money doing the stuff you love?
Just a run-of-the-mill axe murderer.
Yeah, how can you do what you love and get paid for it? Okay, so...
flip houses.
The cool thing is that this house is still standing, right,
yes,
young Brittany?
It
I'm
is.
About to go stay there.
Tell us, young Brittany, about this house now.
So you can go and tour the house during March through November. It's open daily.
Why do they close in the wintertime?
I don't know.
It's colder than a witch's tit.
It's probably cold
in Iowa.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
pretty
nice in Iowa.
You're going inside.
The birds migrate south.
There.
The mice leave. Everybody leaves.
It's like getting to the Overlook Hotel.
So the house is still there.
Yes, and they have daytime tours and overnight stays.
Because it's haunted.
Yes, I guess so. I would.
Yeah, there is some belief that there's some paranormal activity that occurs in the house, and it's popular with all the people who are interested in that sort of thing.
I would agree. I would definitely agree. But
would you like to stay there?
I don't think I would do an
would
overnight.
Would you hit yourself in the face with an axe?
No, but I might bring an axe just in case. But the prices are pretty reasonable for just the daytime tour. It's $10 per person for somebody 12 and over. I don't know why you'd want to bring your kids, but it's $5
for
7 to 11. And then if you're a senior citizen, it's $5. And over...
That's nicer than they give senior citizens.
They do.
You know,
nothing
this,
if not economical.
My son is a marketing major, marketing and PR major.
Very close to me right now. I don't like it.
Do you know why seniors get discounts on things like this?
So they'll go and spend money.
No, because
they're not going to remember.
They're only going to remember half the shit they see.
Older
so why
people,
charge
they
them
have
price?
The, and they
so
have
will
the,
you.
And,
that's horrible.
And you know they have more money than anyone else. Older people.
Right.
They do a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
They do
well,
a bunch
what'll
of
happen
stuff.
Is they give them a discount on the entrance, and then when they hit the gift shop.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't
your
know
money
if,
maker.
I don't know if there's a gift shop here.
Oh,
yeah, you buy slab
it's
of bacon.
In the bedrooms.
You can get
bacon.
Rubber axes. Rubber axes are fun.
No, we don't know that there's a gift shop. You're right.
You can get all the cool scars like you get from Halloween that makes
you
look
tape
like,
on. Yeah.
Let's do not commit libel. We do not know or slander. We do not know that. But you can take tours.
Yes, and so that's the daytime prices.
They have a really cool website, which we won't give, but you can Google it.
They have a really good website where you can find all these times and prices, but the overnight stay. You can stay with 1 to 6 guests.
I bet they do have a gift shop.
And how much does it sell? It may. How much does it set you back?
It's $428.
Per person?
No.
No, for a group of 6. And then each additional person is $74.
Well, why don't they let 8 people stay there since they were 8 people that were murdered?
I'm not sure. Maybe we can.
Well, it says for additional people, they just give you a group
rate.
At 6.
Yeah, I guess
6.
That's their group rate.
And then you can stay. Others can stay.
I want about 40 to go in when I stay there.
I don't.
Yeah, I would need a large group of people. Yeah.
Not even a large group of people.
And they had, I don't know if you saw it on the website, but the 100th anniversary of this thing happened 3 years ago. And it was, I forget the amount that they were charging, but it was, it was very, very expensive to stay on the 100th anniversary of this.
It was like the Axe Murder Festival.
And to stay the night on the June 9th and 10th, you have to get reservations.
I was going to say, like a year
in advance. Yeah. Yeah, it's really, you can get reservations for, I think it's the same price, but you have to get them way in advance.
Yeah.
So check out that website. It's pretty cool.
Definitely.
And if I was ever I've never been in Iowa, but if I was ever in Villisca, Iowa, I would visit that.
Where's
place.
The hobo convention?
Isn't I don't. It's Iowa? In. It is in Iowa, and I hope to go there someday.
I'm
kind of scared of the hobo convention since Carl Panzeran was raped by a gang of hobos.
He was raped by Carl Panzeran. Because that man went around raping
takes
everybody.
Balls,
yeah, right? You got to be a tough son of a bitch to rape Carl Panzeran. Because he was going around just violating everything that walked.
Okay, Colonel, any sponsors this week?
We do have a sponsor. It's Mel's Hardware.
Okay.
So if you decide to take up axe murdering, stop by Mel's. He sells the sharpest axes in town.
Great.
I thought we were doing the medicine that we got. Our new sponsor was the medicine for man cold called Shut the Fuck Up. I thought it was that.
You know, no. So. And we do have have Mel's down at Mel's Hardware. They got the fans for you women who got the menopause and having the hot flashes all the time.
Brittany.
No, I was talking about you.
I don't know why she's the one over here fanning herself.
Brittany.
She's
the girl,
getting ready to take off. It's hot in here.
What's wrong with you? You're acting like you got a parka on or something.
Okay.
Because
you're sitting
Brittany, behind. Where can people find us?
People can find us on iTunes, HistoryDweebs.com, and our Facebook page.
Yes, and if they listen to us on Dweeb, HistoryDweeb.com.
On Dweeb.
And if they listen to us on iTunes, what would we like for them to do?
We would really like for you to leave us a lovely comment.
Brandy.
That's true. We would like that.
Yes.
Brandy, what?
Chuck, in your sexy voice, beg people to leave us a comment.
Look here, people.
That's not a sexy voice at
all.
We've been
asking you for a long, long, long time.
We have 5 comments.
We got 5 comments.
In 5 months.
You act like my damn children. How many times I got to ask you to do something before you do it? Do I got to stop sending you money? What do I got to do? Threaten to come up there and kick your
ass?
In your
sexy voice.
That is his sexy voice. That's as good as it gets.
Let me try again. Hello, listeners.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Just a quieter Colonel voice.
You felt a little tingle when I said that.
I felt a little tingle in my throat. So
anyway,
that.
Hello, listeners.
I feel violated.
What we'd really like you to do is go to the iTunes and leave a nice comment for us. Even if you don't like us, leave a comment. Now, if you leave a nasty comment,
okay,
I'm going to come and kick
ass. We'll take any comments. That's how people find us. So until next time, say goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye,
goodbye.
Everyone.
Goodbye,
that's
everyone.
My sexy carnal voice again.
No,
goodbye,
no, it's bad.
Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.